Hello and welcome to The Undermined, a podcast about brute war AI development. My name is Shonku, your host from makingcomputerdothings.com. Let us begin. Welcome to the 22nd episode of The Undermined podcast. It is a first occasion where I have four guests who are Antiga. Hey Antiga, welcome back.
Pleased to be here again.
How Pen. Hey How, welcome back.
Hi, Shonku. Thanks for having me again.
And two new guests. The first is Ankh Mardor, which I was not sure how to pronounce, and I will be calling him Ankh throughout the cast. Hello.
Hey, nice to meet you.
And Brian Weber. Hello, Brian, and glad to have you both here.
Hello. Nice to be here.
And as it is customary, let's start with the introduction of our new people, or how do I put this eloquently, the people who are first on this cast. So, Brian, would you mind starting and giving us an introduction and speaking about yourself a bit?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm the author of CoonieBot, which is a Zergbot, and I'm a researcher at the College of Staten Island. I'm an economist, so I'm kind of interested in like macro, and this is my first bot, and I have a couple of students who every few semesters they make changes or modifications to it.
Where did you start developing the bot?
Oh, I started developing it, I think it's about 2 years ago now. And I was interested in kind of like how many workers you want in reference to how big your army size should be. And I used a really simple, typical economic model called the Cobb-Douglas model. And I kind of took a view of how many units each bot was producing and tried to train a bot to get a good mix of those things. And I've wrote almost everything myself. I've only recently in the last year started taking advantage of other libraries like FAP or the BWEM, but it's helping a lot. So got to make sure I take a look at what's out there before I try and reinvent the wheel, I suppose.
You have a Zergbot, is that correct?
Yeah.
And which language are you developing in?
It is C++, and it's C++ through and through.
And how did you come upon this scene in the first place?
I've actually kind of been lurking for a long time, but sometime after AlphaGo, I realized if I don't get involved in one of these projects now, all the games I consider interesting will be have been like solved with before I can do anything. And I always wanted to kind of build an AI for this type of purpose, do some applied game theory or something like that. And this was a great opportunity to do it. There's pretty good tutorials to get started. Yep.
And I think that you are the first person on the podcast without an engineering or programming background. Or do you have one? You are just a professor of economics in the meantime as well.
I have no programming background. So I had to sit down and do some tutorials to learn about how to program C++. I had lots of questions for the forum, and the people here have been very, very helpful making sure that I learned both the basics and a little bit more about how to make sure that my code is structured better. This has been a good opportunity to learn a lot about how to test your code, how to make sure that you quality test everything. Because as I write like programming or like scripts for statistics, but those are all much shorter. But here, in something this large or ornate, there are so many redundant or interlacing systems that small bugs can escape notice for ages unless you have very smart diagnostics. So, and learning about how to quality test my code has all been a new process.
Well, as a software developer, I have some kind of mixed feelings regarding university quality code, but let's table that discussion for now. That was little tongue-in-cheek. Don't take it seriously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I was like, I can understand that. So I'm getting better. So.
Yes. So the same kind of questions is have to be asked of you, Ank. Would you mind giving us an introduction?
Sure. So I've got a bachelor's of computer science. So I've got more of a background in programming. I joined after lurking for a few months, I think, and mostly on the Twitch and Jay's blog. And then after a few months, I felt confident enough that I could join the conversation. Let's see. And then I've been here for about 2 to 3 years. And I've been working on developing a bot. I don't have any bot out currently on the ladder. It's a C++ bot, Zerg, basically. Let's see. Well, eventually. I've found this place from the Reddit. Someone made a post to the artificial intelligence Reddit. I was lurking there for interesting news, and I heard StarCraft, and I was like, wow, that's incredible. I haven't heard about StarCraft in forever. So, yeah.
Yeah, Reddit seems to be directing people here every now and then. I'm always curious, how do people find out about the SSEIT tournament, because it's all over the place. And it's interesting what you said, because some people, or rather a lot of people, get intimidated by the technical expertise required to participate in this scene. And I think that's a mistake. You should just come into the Discord and feel free to ask questions. And definitely we had some members without any considerable programming background, and despite that, writing decent bots. So yeah, don't be afraid. And you are delving into depths of Brood War, because I remember that last cast I wrongly said that the dragon pathfinding is wonky because of reasons, but you corrected me and said the exact reason is not because they change sizes during movement, but some other reason, which I'd like you to describe, because I don't remember it exactly. So the point is, you seem to delve very deep and be knowledgeable about Brood War's inner workings.
Yeah. So a lot of it was that I try to know the game that I'm playing very in depth. I'm a min-maxer. I look for little tiny advantages that can be gained, the best way to do things and things to avoid. Part of how I started on this path of figuring out the deep knowledge is people would ask questions of, oh, how does this work on Twitch chat? And so I started off helping, it was a Rackhammer. When he was making his bot, I delved deep into these things. First, I started off with just, I created a simple bot from, what was it? It wasn't Command Center. It was the bot before that. I would just create a bot and then write a simple script that will explore a mechanic, and it will just post the results. And so that's how I would get detailed knowledge. Then I found the open BW source code for StarCraft, and after that I just took off. I went in an endless search for knowledge. Say the exact thing for Dragoons was there was I had to find the program IceCC, which someone else and on Jay's blog pointed me to, that it allows you to open the IceCrypt files and convert those from a more of a machine language into a human readable language. It basically just expands the file for human readability. And you can look at the actual animation scripts for the units. So we could look at Dragoons and see that they only moved every other frame. And while that does make things a little weird in the movement, the key there is that you can also look in the path findings when you issue a command to a unit, and it starts a pathfinding, it will pick a random delay of 0 to 2 frames before it starts moving along its path. So you add a couple of units side by side. One of them might start at 0 frames delay, and the other might start 2 frame delay, which means that there's a potential that the one in behind could end up walking for 2 frames into the one in front of it. And so you got a box of these units, and you got the option for many of these units to be walking into each other for a small period of time.
So it's the delay that causes them to move out of unit.
Yeah, that's the main reason why things, especially if you have them really tightly packed. But there's basically no way of syncing them from a stopped point. If you wanted to get them all synchronized in their exact movements, you would have to have them spread out and keep moving. And then from there, you would move them, merge them slowly. I don't know how you'd create an algorithm to solve that, but you would have to get them moving, because as long as they're still moving, they won't have to start that random delay again. And so it just every other turn movement, you just sync those up, move them next to each other, and send them where you want. That's definitely something only a bot could ever do.
Great. Could you send them backwards and then forwards, or changing direction re-triggers it?
No, you can change direction. I've done this with Zerglings and stuff like that. You can go back and forth. The trick with rotating is that there's a turn time, because every unit has a turn rate, but it's still considered moving and following a path. And changing the path that's following does not start the pathfinding over again, because it basically just says a new path has been issued, I'm following this one now, instead of saying I stopped this path, now I'm starting a new path.
Huh.
I wonder what was the reasoning behind these decisions. This is a great case of unintended consequences and artificial stupidity.
I was going to say, I think it's actually they wanted to introduce a small amount of randomness into units to make them feel less organized, because otherwise you get this amazing unison. You can see this a lot in the Zerg process, where the larva will spawn at random times, and just everything, there's randomness. It's just not everything, I guess, but just little tiny things that they add a little random just to make things feel slightly different.
All right, next question is to Hao. You seem to have a new Zerg project on the works, and would you mind saying a few words about that?
Well, yes. So I had this Zerg bot fresh meet last year, and it was developed based on Igor's code, or the author of Iron Bot. I was very, very unsatisfied was not very happy about the crash rate it had on Basel. It had around 20% crash rate And I try to resolve it, but it's just, I figured it's probably better if I just start from new. That's the motivation. Motivation to develop my Certbot. So my plan right now is to develop the Certbot based on my AITT bot, the so-called skill bot, so that I can have full control of the code, so I know exactly every bit of it. So once a crash happens, then I know exactly where to find such crash or the cause of it. And then there are three main things I plan for this Certbot. So the first is the build order selection. I already have a custom made Bayesian bandit algorithm implemented for my main bot, the Terran Haopan bot. I plan to do some little research on this algorithm, because I think there's still something I'm not so sure of. For example, the prior distribution of the win rate of the opponent, and what's the best distribution to use there, or some other niche things. And the second thing I plan on my Certbot is the unit movement utilizing a potential field. So this is something I did. I also implemented for my main bot, but with some modification, and I plan to also implement it for my Certbot. The issue is that my main bot you can see some units can be very cowardly against some units. For example, I've seen funny pictures like 10 plus, maybe 12, or maybe 18 glides surrounding a sunken colony, but none of them wanted to attack the sunken colony, which obviously that's not the wise thing to do. So with that, with the new potential field, I hope such issue can be improved. Now, the third thing I plan on my Certbot is the sort of the improvement on the so-called continual online evolution planning algorithm developed by Niels Justesen and other his research colleagues, because I'm not very certain about the parameters used in the model, and also I think it's perhaps a bigger problem for me is how to develop the forward model for the opponent. The forward model is used by the COEP, Continual Online Evolution Planning, to predict what kind of units the opponent has at a specific time, or it will have at a future time. Right now, I'm building it based on the built-in AI, which obviously is a very, very simple approach, considering we have so many bots, and some bots, they do not get the same unit in every game. For example, Crazio's bot, he can sometimes go mech, it can also go bio, depending on the opponent and the matchup. So I hope to improve the forward model for the COEP. Those are the three things I plan for my Certbot, and if things go well, I hope I can participate in CIG or AID with this bot, but not sure. It might be a very, very I mean, the time-wise, the constraint may be very heavy for me. So we'll see.
Yeah, a lot of people are preparing for CIG and aid, and yeah, it's a lot to do with a brand new bot and all of that. I sort of have a question about the third item there that you had spoken about with opponent modeling. One of the things that I've struggled to try and reconcile is that if a bot uses a whole bunch of really complex opponent modeling and then makes decisions off of them, what do you do if you don't have information where they deny scouting in some fashion? It seems to be sort of, you know, that portion of the model falls apart and you have to work with a backup plan. How do you plan to approach that, or have you thought about that portion of it?
Yeah, so there are two two things I plan for the forward modeling. The first is to solve this problem. The first is to collect data over time. I mean, for example, if you have 10 games, then collect every single aggregatively every single unit of your interest. For example, the total zealots the opponent built, total number of dragoons, reavers, etc. Every we'll start with something simple, just zealots and dragoons. Every single one of them you count. For example, you built maybe 100 zealots and 200 dragoons. Then, and also I collected as a function of time. For example, at 5 minute mark, how many zealots? How many dragoons the opponent has, etc. So the goal is to build a regression model on top of that data structure to give you an idea because for the next game. For some opponent, you don't even know what kind of strategy the opponent will use. So you will look. I think it will make sense to look at all the past games and let's say he could possibly get 100 zealots or he could possibly get 200 dragoons. I don't know, but I should prepare for both. So that's the first aspect of the forward modeling I'm considering to improve. Or to work on, and the second aspect is to do a similar thing, but only for the previous game, so the idea is that if the opponent won the game with that strategy in the previous game, then it makes sense to assume that it will continue to use such strategy or similar thing in the next match. So if I build a regression model on its unit composition, then I would very likely believe that the accuracy of such model will be good in this game. But if the opponent lost the previous game, then I would do this regression modeling for the opponent's highest win, or on the opponent's best strategy. So obviously, I need to have some strategy identification algorithm built as well, so that I can identify what set of the strategies the opponent had used on my bot. So yeah, so after that, you just find the opponent's best strategy and build the regression model on top of that. So that's the other aspect of things that I plan to work on.
That ties in to another topic, which is CIG. Are you preparing, question to the others, are you preparing for CIG or planning to participate?
Well, so as I said, I am, but it really depends on how much can be done before the deadline. So at this point, I'm not sure if if you ask me how are you going to participate in COG or CIG, I really have no clue, because the ZerpBot is actually, for now, it's, I mean, the prototype is done. It can do a move and build the units I tell it to build. That's about it. It can barely win the built-in AI, but that's not the kind of status I wanted to have to participate in the CIG. I don't think it will be very competitive, and it's kind of pointless too, because it just lacks the things I intend to implement there. So,
no. Brian, Ank?
I submitted a paper for COG this year instead of and they accepted it. So I've got a paper on like causal inference in games. So that's what I'm my main focus for COG has been this year is publishing. I have to rewrite some of the learning files to work for COG. And I have a grad student who is going to be doing some work on how the bot learns, or has been doing some work on how the bot learns. So I think for now, I want to have my hands off of that section while they're fiddling, because you don't want too many hands in the same bucket. But yeah, so I guess how I was talking about using regression models in predicting what's going on, and I was noting that there are some real challenges if you're using regression models of any sort, or like stuff like random forest or other machine learning techniques to predict winning of outcomes from features in the game. There are challenges on causal inference from that, because sometimes, for example, my bot tends to win by surrounding the opponent, filling the map, mining all the minerals, and then eventually a moving into their base. Like if I'm winning, that's usually how that will happen. And so one might think to try and predict game winning with minerals mined. But if you did that in StarCraft, minerals mined would be seen as a very strong indicator of whether or not you're winning, too strong of an indicator, because often the minerals I'm mining are not helping me win. I am mining the minerals because I am winning. And that feedback leads to bias in estimates. And while if your interest is only to predict whether or not you're winning, that perhaps is not much of an issue. But if you're interested in prescribing to the bot what type of behavior you want to do, then there is an issue, because your prescription for the bot will overemphasize mining minerals in that case. And I talk about that issue more broadly. I find it for a Dota data set. Kind of look at some of those issues there and provide some tools that exist outside of the machine learning literature. So that's been my focus for COG or CIG.
Is that paper published or will be published somewhere else? Keep in mind, I don't really know how academia works.
They'll be, CIG has accepted it. So we're doing our revisions to make sure they still accept it. And then COG will publish it. And I believe I have the ability to provide a preprint, which I'll do relatively shortly. But we'd like to make our last few rounds of changes before we put a preprint in the forum. But I think it's very interesting, and it'll be applicable particularly, like in this case, I mine a lot of games, and I look at the output for the data, and making a prescription on what my bot should do based on the features of the game is actually a little tricky. Here I can do A-B testing, and A-B testing is always safe, but I just make one group with the change, one group without the change, compare the results, and that's how I make the decisions. But there are other types of inferences that are not safe.
Anko, what's your take on tournaments and CIG?
Yeah, so I don't think I'll get anywhere done for any of the upcoming tournaments. I'm, at this point, I think I'd hope to accomplish something by the end of year SCAT tournament. Because I think I'm probably just being too ambitious. But I really like focusing on really fine-tuned micro tasks, and especially the mineral gatherings. I've been working on the micro for that. It was the whole reason for going into the open BW simulation, rather than before I was working on more of a record and statistical model of recording previous paths to and from resources in order to make a strong guess as to what the time would be for the harvest. Instead, I wanted to see if I could create a accurate simulation to predict with a high degree of certainty, including all sorts of little nuances such as turn rate and facing directions and various other little minor inconveniences.
Yeah, I can definitely relate. Overemphasizing one problem. When listening to that, if I had a subtitle, it would be Cries in Pathfinding, because that's for the last 10 or 20 series of my bot articles, I've been tackling that problem, and I'm still not done. So yes, sometimes just one sub-problem can eat up all your development and thinking time. Speaking of papers, you mentioned the COEP algorithm. Is that public and published somewhere? I got the impression that's an academic paper type thing.
Yes, it is done by Niels Justesen and his research colleagues. I think he has maybe two or three of three papers on the same topic, but I think with a slightly different focus.
I will include the link if I can find it with the podcast post, and I will read it too, because it seems really interesting. How did you feel when your matches got cast versus Jealous? For the listeners who are not familiar with this, Jealous is a human player, and he was kind enough to have a stream versus our bots, and I think it was very entertaining, just by itself, but from a bot developer perspective as well. And Haupan was one of the bots that got fought.
Yeah, so I definitely appreciate the, Jealous doing this, not just using my bot, but against other bots too, because I think this bi-weekly event is really, really good, thing for both bot others to identify, hey, my bot is not doing well on this and that, or it's doing well on this and that. So first of all, I would like to, thank Jealous for doing this. Back to the question. I think overall, I'm actually quite satisfied with how the bot performs overall. And I think a lot of times the bot made it so that Jealous wanted to smash his screen because the bot is just an annoying, harassing, for example, his SCVs or, do whatever things that would annoy him. And I think Jealous also posted something similar. The bot being annoying is actually a good thing. The whole series actually reflected a few, drawbacks of my bot. For example, Thinking of those games, I think in one game, just using Protoss, and my bot was using the so-called BBSB strategy, barracks supply barracks, and just do marine rush on him. I mean, it was unfortunate that Jaws scouted the train of marines coming towards his base, so he prepared a calling. Otherwise, I think the outcome would be quite different. But otherwise, I mean, after the initial push actually being held, my bot was actually not able to identify the situation and didn't transition fast enough, so it got rolled over by the Dragoons once Jealous got a significant amount of them. So yeah, that's the one drawback. I mean, it still comes down to decision making. Hey, when to, when to transition into a mid game, but when to, insist on doing the initial strategy. So that's one big problem for me right now.
Yeah, I think the games were interesting, and you gave a good challenge to Jealous. And I won't say anything more because I did cast some of those games and will cast Human versus AI matches. That sounded like an advertisement. So, yeah, you can see it. Just tune in to the SSA AIT tournament weekly stream, and also buy Wolf Cola. but I'm curious to hear the other guests' opinions on these, not just this stream, but man versus machine matches in general.
Well, since the Haupan matches were played, Jealous has actually made it into sort of a bi-weekly event, the first of which was against Proxy, which was a really interesting series, and Proxy actually won several games in that series. There's a thread up on Team Liquid that sort of documents its progress, and he's scheduled to play Seda on May 16th at 3 p.m. MDT.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
Yeah, I think it's really important that people have the opportunity to play against humans, because if you only play against bots, it's very difficult to, I suppose the word would be to get the feel of I guess the character or the personality of your bot. You when you play people, they have like a style, and it's nice to see how that is expressed when it plays other people. So that's, I guess, the artistry side of it.
If I may add, I like how the matches were played out. At least when Jealous was playing my bot, it doesn't seem he knew what kind of strategies my bot had. On one end, I actually prefer this way as compared to, Jealous, he studied the bot extensively, so he knew what's coming at him. So it's definitely interesting for me to see how a human reacts to some, for example, emergency situations when a doom drop happens, or when a marine rush happens, how he reacts, and how, kind of things the bot could do to actually make the push more deadly. So I think, well, I guess I hope this Jealous continue to do what he's been doing. Yeah.
It's actually an interesting problem that I run into. I played the bot so much as a human that, unfortunately, my feedback is often fairly exploitive towards the nature of the bot, especially because in some cases I've helped with the development of the bot. So I understand the inner workings too well and can be a little bit too abusive, whereas someone who has not ever played bots very much before or has not ever played that specific bot can give perhaps more honest feedback in some areas that's more genuine.
Well, a lot of your feedback in the past has been very, very constructive. And I think a lot of the bots have like theoretical areas that they need to work on. And like when there was the StarCraft II games against DeepMind, I remember at that time you were also very particularly keen on people need to be cannon rushing against these bots. It's hard to train a bot not to get cannon rushed. And I think those are the types of strategies that if they had been more exposed to at the time, and they might have been willing to try against this instead of playing for straight up macro games or something like that.
I think humans have a lot to learn from the anti-machine chess groups specifically. Humans have learned when trying to play against chess computers that if you play sort of normal strategies that are non-creative and try and play them sort of in a straight-up fashion, you're very likely to be to fall behind in that effort. And I think that playing creatively or in an unusual fashion on purpose allows a little bit more exploitation.
I think that's just putting a bot in a real world perspective. I mean, it's like saying that, oh, you cheese, then that doesn't count. Of course it counts. There is no cheese, there is only winning the game, especially in bot versus bot matches, at least in my opinion.
I agree quite strongly. Having done quite a bit in the competitive scene at StarCraft and helped a lot on the bot side, winning is winning. It doesn't matter how you win. So,
yeah, as long as you don't outright cheat, everything within the game's constraints is allowed.
Yep. Yeah, you play within the competitive rules, of course, very strictly. But anything inside the match is, please do it. It makes the bots more robust as they're exposed to more and more things and complicated ideas, and oftentimes, you know, really sophisticated bot development plans can fall apart by simple exploitation. And there's been many instances of that over the years. And robustness is highly rewarded, as well as sort of deep layers of understanding when you code things to have an escape path from the route you're going down.
It is quite funny for me because I worked in the financial industry as a developer, and this is akin to saying that you release some banking software into the wild, people steal your money, and you just say, oh, that's not how you supposed to use my software. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I wasn't paying really attention to the ladders, Basil and the SSCIT ladder. Is there anything interesting happening on those?
A bunch of stuff. Probably the most interesting is the Rise of Dragon, which is developed by TSCMU, one of the main developers on CherryPie at Facebook, who's just doing it as a side project. It's a fork of CherryPie with all the machine learning removed and playing Terran. And it's pretty successful for a one-build wonder bot without a lot of reactive stuff inside of it. It's currently pacing for 15th on the ladder, and for a bot that loses to 4-pool to be 15th is very, very impressive. If he just put another build order in there with a little bit of learning that would counter 4-pool, he'd probably have a top 10 bot. And we've always known that TSCMU is a darn brilliant programmer, but it's really quite interesting effort, and it'd be interesting to see where he takes it in the future, and I hope that he continues to develop on that platform.
I think he managed to surprise us yet again.
I've underestimated TSCMU's ability to win in tournaments several times in the past to my detriment.
That sounded like a line from a fantasy movie.
It's true, though. He's really good at finding exploits in other bots' strategies and plans. Quite the brilliant guy.
Some people were talking about potentially opening, or not opening, or making some other forks of Cherry Pie in the future without the machine learning. So I was just seeing on the chat that at least a few people said that maybe in the future we'll be seeing more of those.
Yeah, I think we will. It's hard right now. I worked on trying to do exactly that, removing the machine learning out of Cherry Pie, and they're so intricately tied to each other due to the client server model and how it pipes stuff through Torch that what I came to the realization of is that by the time you removed all of that, that it was almost as much work to write a bot from scratch or use something like Steamhammer as a base. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, only a Facebook developer that worked on Cherry Pie has decided to fork it. That said, at some point in the future when the aid ladder does exist, I expect that there will be multiple Cherry Pie forks with the machine learning portions of it included for use in those in bots that will come about after that. But unfortunately, with only one tournament a year aid, and you know, we don't know, you know, will Cherry Pie show up and play? We don't know. And if they do, someone else has a fork, will probably not be allowed to play. So there's a sort of a disincentive right now to fork from their platform, even though it is awesome and really fun to work with and play with. But it's just from a competitive standpoint right now, it's a little rough to use their code base.
All right. Our next topic, which is a favorite of mine and been touched before a few times. I always keen to hear about war stories and WTF moments during development. Do you have any memorable facepalms while developing your bot? And Ankh, this is a question for you specifically. Did you encounter any incomprehensible or baffling pieces in Brood Wars code? I guess the answer is yes, but please elaborate on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of little things that are hard to understand just because I think some of it's because the code for OpenBW is from a decompiled version of the game, and so it had to be relabeled by TSMU. I'd say the most recent one was when I found out that once a building finishes construction, especially for Protoss, that it's not actually available yet. It's got a sort of transition time, so it finishes and it's got this little animation that goes on, and that animation is not located in any standard places. It's actually got two or three different locations for a timer, because the timer gets handed off between various sections and various states. So you had to jump around going back and forth from animations and state information in order to figure out how long that would take. And it would have been so much easier just to have a simple counting timer and have an animation based on that timer. But for StarCraft, an animation is a all-in-one package. It's not just the frame that's to be displayed on any given time. It has actions to be taken as well. It's more of a scripting language than a picture or like a movie or animation like that. So you can find a lot of interesting things, like when in an attack the actual damage is issued, when does the projectile actually get spawned. So that was probably the most recent weird oddity. There's really no shortage of them. There was the pathfinding, let's see, I found out that you can also discover this from just playing around with the game, roughly, is that the game only uses essentially an object of like one size to travel the map and find a path. It doesn't actually use a object of the actual size of the unit to figure out whether their unit can go through a path. And whether it can go through terrain, it uses an object about the size of a Zergling. So if a Zergling can fit through, then it will try and shove a Ultralisk through that same location. Let's see. I don't know. There's a lot of little peculiarities, but it's hard to come up with all of them off the top of my head.
Did you discover any possible exploits?
Yes. That was one of the main reasons I've spent so much time on mineral gathering. There's a concept in pro-level gathering gaming, which they call it mineral boosting, which human players can only exploit this at a specific corner positions for minerals, which is that when you send a worker to gather minerals from a mineral that's diagonally located from the resource depot, what they use to align the time is to click return resources while it's after it's gathered some, and it will head directly back. It will impact on the corner of the depot, turn around immediately, and proceed back to the mineral. In my work, I call it a zero frame action completion, which basically every 8 frames, the game will update the state of certain actions to see if it's completed, and then it can proceed to the next state of an action. So most of the time, when your mineral workers return, they'll hit the resource depot before that 8th frame, the frame 0, I guess, for updates, and they'll have to wait for that next cycle to come around, which can be anywhere from 2 to 6 frames, usually. But with a bot, you can easily monitor all of your workers and issue a return to command center, command to all of them on time and get 0 frame returns for every single worker. And on top of that, you can also plan for arriving at minerals, since the same thing applies there. So you can save this up to 8 frame delay. Usually it's about 4 frames, though, on average. So you can save, on average, 8 frames per trip, per worker, the entire game. The average length of a mineral trip is, I believe, 130 frames. So it's about a 8% savings, I think. I actually approximate it's about 10%.
It's quite so significant.
Yeah, considering that this also this is just a pathing the change. It's not a organizational change, which is mineral locking. Mineral locking is when you assign only a worker to only go back and forth from the same mineral over and over again. Usually, people cap it at 2 per mineral or so, roughly. And they'll go back and forth, and that will usually produce about a 10% savings in time, roughly, because they're not wandering around. But this is an organizational change, which means it stacks with a pathing change. So you get both of these bonuses on top of each other for a bot. On top of that, I found another exploit, which I really haven't elaborated yet on the forums and such, which is that any floating unit for the ground can be experience the same micro as a vulture. That because you can issue more commands to achieve a result in less time. essentially, because the developers only created their state machine for their attack procedure or execution of orders only has stops located, unit stop movement, basically commands in specific locations. And you can issue commands to avoid those stops. This also applies to workers. When they return to the Nexus, they don't have any command that causes them to stop, which is part of why the mineral boosting works on the corner so well, is that they don't impact, basically they don't face plant into the resource center and come to a full stop. And this is actually how I discovered it myself, is I was just watching and recording times for return, and every once in a while they would just naturally proceed faster than anything that made sense. Is basically all of the ones returning minerals on the sides of the flat sides rather than a corner were face planting into the resource command center or the resource center, coming to a complete stop, turning around, and then going back. But by issuing a move command, you tell them to move where they would go if they were going to harvest, but not actually tell them to harvest. They will turn around and start off with about 2/3 of their momentum preserved.
I've played with this with Archons, that you can get them to slide fire and do some really interesting stuff.
Yeah, it's basically the same concept as a vulture, and you can do it with all sorts of objects that float. I believe Arakhammer did it with flying Zerg units. So he had it with the Guardians and the Mutas. His Guardians turned out to be very effective because of that, because they were never coming to a complete stop, and so you could have them on the go, and it was easier to position them that way too. I haven't played around so much with the attack, but it was very interesting to have found out that workers were just coincidentally doing the current behavior. We just don't notice most of the time because we aren't paying attention to every frame.
Are you talking about, okay, so like I have Guardians and they don't usually show up, are you talking about like they animate the canceling, there's like some sort of backswing or something like that on the Guardians, and you just issue a move command right away and then they don't have this weird behavior and they keep their full move speed like Mutalisks?
There's a slight difference between workers and workers aren't telling them to attack. For the Guardians and such, you would actually tell them, I believe it's the patrol micro technique that you used with vultures, is that you rather than telling them to attack the object directly, which will cause them to walk up to the position, get in range, come to a complete stop, then issue an attack, then start, if you told them to move, like turn around and go away, they would have to speed up again because they would have dumped. Basically, they dump all of their speed and say, I now have zero speed. Or in the process of Guardians, I believe, they start floating roughly in the same direction. So they'll say, I've stopped moving, but I still preserve my momentum, which is why they'll oftentimes get too close to their targets, is because they're still drifting with that residual momentum towards their attack target. So rather than that, one of the questions was, how could we prevent them from getting too close to the attack targets? And one of the things was, could we dump that or could we redirect them? And it turns out that Vulture Micro was the best thing to do with that, which is basically say, or just basically the same thing you would do with a Mutalisk, where you would use the patrol command and you would let them choose their own target, basically, rather than designating a specific target. And you just say, oh, you're just going to patrol him. You just happen to attack along the way, rather than saying, I definitely want to attack this. I'm going to stop and designate my whole focus on attacking this.
Wow, that sounds awesome. That's if it's really something that hasn't been yet, done yet, then I can proudly say that this podcast is an information for Premier exploits. Or I might do it in a clickbait way that this bot developer tried to implement Vulture Micro and you won't believe what happened next. I think that should be the title, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's going to work out for most people, though, because one of the biggest problems I found is that it's the Vulture Micro with workers is most viable with small numbers of workers, because during the time where you issue the move command, which has got a necessarily, you have to have a period of at least 2 to 3 frames where it will be moving rather than harvesting, which means it will have a collision box. Whereas most of the time, workers don't have collision, which means that if two workers were trap and return and overlap at the same time while doing this, they would collide and then split off in their opposite directions first. I've had cases where the workers will float over top of the resource center in order to avoid the collisions. It's just like popping workers over top of minerals. It's basically which is actually the use for that collision popping on or off is that most of the time you'll send a worker to mine from something and then have them stop. You'll use it for worker rushes. Like if you want to stop zealots from attacking your workers, you'll have them mine and stop them on top of the zealots, and then they'll both act weird because pathfinding freaks out because you have two overlapping units. The same thing can happen with this, though.
Well, I hope you make it into a very nice and conveniently separable file so that we can all take it as soon as you fix it.
I was just going to ask the same questions. How many pizzas do you require to make this open source?
At the moment, a BW sim and probably a few structures related to tracking the position and patterns, as well as the planning for the workers. Because the idea is to plan, now that you have deterministic planning, you could, or set up, because you know exactly how they're going to behave, you could plan several steps in advance. So you could know for the next 3 harvests, basically, where every single worker will be. That way you can also plan so that they don't, you could optimize such that they will return in alternating schedules so they don't overlap. Because they have to have them returning so that they don't overlap, so you could implement the faster speeds. Otherwise, they collide. And that could also, you can get them to arrive as soon as one is leaving from a resource, roughly. There's some statistical things, because you can statistically state when a worker is like 99% chance going to be done with their field, because it's a semi-random ending for the minerals. So I'd like to make it separable, but it's going to be tied, I think, in a lot to, I was planning on integrating it with the base defense in general, or base setup for monitoring units. So we'll see.
I think I have another possible thing here. This is a little bit of spoiler for tomorrow's cast, but I noticed that stasis units shouldn't move, right? That's the basic behavior of stasis, that those units can't interact in any way with the environment. But in one of the games, I noticed that when a lot of units were clumped together, they got stasis, and after that, they moved around some, probably related to some pathfinding and collision detection. And I'm wondering if that's a known thing, and if a bot can exploit that.
Maybe I would suspect. Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I think Antiga would probably be familiar with it, since it's part of pro play. You have to know what to do if someone's status is the units on a ramp, which is usually that you'll take a worker or something like that. And I don't, he probably knows it better than me.
Yeah, you can drill to move them, but oftentimes it's a situation where they're stuck. And it can be really effective ramp block. And they're not easy to move either.
But you can move stasised units?
Yes.
Okay, so this is not a new thing that I just discovered.
No, it's an old thing. It doesn't come up very often, though. If you're talking about fun, just a note on the fun bugs topic, sometime ask McRave about the time he spent set Ultralisk armor to 43,738. That's a great story, if you get bored.
I definitely will. And we're going on about exploits, but are there any more war stories you want to share? Famous bugs and stuff?
Probably one of the more famous bugs in my mind that's been fixed is Purple Wave's performance bug, which is really worth a read, understanding how that happened and how it got fixed. If you search in the technical BWA API section of the Discord and search for Purple Wave and performance, it'll take you right to the post. It's about a year ago now. And it's really fascinating because he basically had a situation where every performance improvement that he did actually made his bot slower. And then he managed to fix the underlying bug and it unleashed a year and a half of performance improvements all at once. And the diagnostic tools that he was using were actually showing that every time he made a fix, it made his bot faster when it was actually doing the exact opposite. And it's a really fascinating read.
That's awesome. Let's move on to the next topic, which is a little bit a thought of mine. And let me share a brief story about that. As you might have noticed that I'm working on the human versus bot ladder, and I had a pleasant surprise, as many people offer to help, and that's very kind of them. And I'm a firm believer in the no free lunch philosophy. I don't think I can reasonably expect anyone to help with this if I'm not paying him or her. But it turns out that some people are genuinely willing to help without compensation, just out of passion. And first of all, thank you everyone who offered. Second of all, it got me thinking, do you think any kind of group project within this scene would make sense, or would bring the community a little bit closer? This is just a purely theoretical and purposefully vague question, so feel free to think on it.
I think there's already a lot of group projects, but based around the goals of the project. You have academic group projects, you have APIs, there's several bot developers that are collaborative to different degrees, depending on what their goals are and things like that. Of course, a lot of the underlying tools are also collaborative in nature, especially the map analysis systems and things like that, and the wikis and stuff like that. So, and the tournament running. So there's a lot of different groups that are involved in a lot of different aspects of Brood War AI development. But there's also people who really are sort of solo as well. But it's like any sort of development group. The more people you have involved in something, the more you have to have project management and deadlines and tracking and all that stuff that a lot of us that do this as a hobby kind of struggle with to do it just sort of for fun, you know, and sort of enjoy the solo aspect of development too, and being able to test and try ideas without having to answer to a boss or authority as well. So you have stuff all over the place.
Yeah, if you involve Jira in the project, it stops being fun. So yeah, like I said, this is a purposefully a vague question, and of course there are group projects. I'm part of some of them. Well, just briefly, but for example, BWAPI4G is a good example. But maybe I'm thinking about something more overarching when everyone can pitch in. I really don't know.
Well, if you once you come up with a concrete idea, I'm sure once you pitch it, there will be at least a lot of years.
What I will probably do is for the bot ladder, human versus bot ladder, I will make a public board with tasks I want to do, and anyone who feels inclined can help with that. But like I said, I'm still skeptical a little, but I have nothing to lose. And as a closing thought, speaking about the bot ladder, which I'm currently calling Artificial Mayhem League, because anything is better than bladder. What, as a bot author, what functionality would you like to have on this ladder? Downloading replays is mentioned, and we are working on that. Other than that, what do you think?
I want a history of the rough MMR that the players self-evaluate, that they could put in that could be attached to the replay. So they say, I'm player so-and-so, my MMR is blah, blah, blah. So you have a rough idea of how good the person is that the bot is playing against. Of course, there could be a huge variety, right? So I think that would be useful data.
I think that could work with some kind of public profile that's already verified, but if you let just the random user put in a number, I feel the data will be a little bit skewed.
Yeah, you can link to... The problem is that Blizzard killed their API for third-party access for their data from their ladder systems, and so they're keeping it all in-house at the moment for Brood War, which is annoying. About a year ago, they did that and gave it the axe. So until that reemerges, while we can pull up profiles and look at ladder rankings and MMR and stuff for players, it's a little bit difficult to export that data in an easy-to-use format for third-party use.
But we can include a profile link, so you can look it up. That is...
Yeah, we could. You could say, they could just put it in, and if the bot author is interested, they could click on the link and see kind of how they're rated.
I think, besides downloading your files, you might want to be able to upload, edited learning files and stuff like that, because I seem to do most of my changes through the learning file, at least the last few cycles.
Yeah, of course, every bot will have a directory or something where you can put that, similar to SSCIT.
I think long run, there might be some interest in bot authors sponsoring people playing their bots, where they pay every person a quarter or something. But that's perhaps further down the road and not necessary at all for an initial release. But it's just something interesting to think about, because data of human versus bot play is very rare at the moment. And in the future, I think you benefit us greatly to have more of that.
I think it should be the other way around. I think bot authors should be sponsored. And with that, this is actually a topic I had in mind previous casts ago, that some kind of monetization would benefit this scene, and maybe especially my ladder. And I know this is a sensitive and maybe controversial topic, and what do you think, what kind of sponsorships or I don't know, paid activities would benefit this, if at all?
I've had lots and lots of conversations about this over the years, and it's a really complicated thing, because authors are involved in it for different reasons. Some are academic, and in a lot of ways are frankly banned from having sponsors, in at least direct involvement in some ways. And you have, of course, individual developers, then you have like half a dozen different licenses for bots and et cetera, et cetera. So it gets complicated quick. That said, there have been outside parties interested in sponsoring tournaments. Some of those conversations has gone well and some not so well over time. Even involving recruiting companies that are interested in hiring bot authors that would win a tournament, for example. There's been some talk about maybe trying to market or brand individual bots like sports teams. So, you know, you have Team Haupan versus Team Steam Hammer, right? And they each have, you know, a website and a blog and a store where they sell t-shirts and, you know, all that sort of stuff that goes into like marketing a sports team. But really, not many ideas of that sort of thing have caught on. I think if an bot author was really interested in being sponsored, you need to have a couple of things. You need to have a good bot name. You need to have a blog that goes with it. You need to be willing to market it and say, you know, developed by so-and-so, sponsored by so-and-so, and at the start of every match it says who the sponsor of the bot development is, and maybe it's developed on NVIDIA or Intel hardware, or some GPU manufacturers especially are interested in sponsoring AI development. So if you were to approach a company like MSI or several other ones, you might have quite a bit of luck as an author in getting some level of sponsorship, at least from previous conversations that I've been part of. I think there are some opportunities out there that do exist for that sort of thing. It's just that we really haven't had a bot author that's really embraced trying to be sort of more of a corporate project and be sponsored and market themselves as the bot as a sports team style brand, at least not yet.
Well, dear sponsors, I'm extremely bribeable.
Yeah, me as well. I would love to give a really large prize for AIST competition, and would be very interested if there would be a sponsor that would be interested in sponsoring that sort of tournament to increase the prize pool.
No additional opinions on this issue?
Well, as someone who works in the education industry, I don't know if there's anything prohibiting sponsorship. But I think, or at least, you know what, that's the type of thing I'd have to ask the HR department about. But I think that what we need to do is make sure that we have you need to have professionals play it as well to highlight the to keep the excitement level high, and then intermittent, and then open up some sort of ladder. So there'd have to be like Mark, as Antigo was saying, there has to be a pretty organized and intentional PR push. And I'm not sure if the whole community is per se interested in that right now, but it doesn't mean it's not impossible.
Yeah, right now the extent of PR is really, you know, what goes up on the Facebook group. And occasionally I write SSCIT or AI bot development press release things that go to like the Pylon show, for example. But that's often the extent of it, other than what's on the organization or different tournament websites.
I think it reminds me more of the machine bot battles than sports teams, but I don't know what their sponsorship model was for that. It seemed more like it was independent creators, and you would get sponsorships for the league just for the advertising space and the view count, more than supporting the creators, because oftentimes you don't get enough interest in individual creators to maintain a sponsorship I feel like, especially with these bots, the amount of development time is really high, especially for an individual creator to accomplish enough to maintain interest, or you're really in it for the long term. If you're doing something like how Jay has his blog, that's been going on for years, and it only makes a little incremental progress for the most part.
It would be interesting to, you know, market it in a way kind of like BattleBots has done, which I'm sure everybody loves BattleBots. But, you know, it involves a lot more than people think, and really almost all of us are doing this for free, so as hobbies. So it's kind of a big ask to have that level of involvement unless someone really is super interested in running a project like that.
I think another thing I've noticed is many people are interested in getting involved, but they want more coherent, a centralized pipeline tutorial of how to do it. The COG tournament team released a little video about how to install Bwopi and so on and so forth, just a run through, because I think David Churchill's video, Dr. Churchill's video, while very helpful, I think things have changed a bit since then. So keeping a good pipeline of video tutorials and so on and so forth to make sure that people who are very unacquainted with this area can get involved easily will help a lot, particularly because most of the projects are individually labors of love, and therefore not necessarily all designed to work together, and doesn't take experience or even skill necessarily to get it all worked together, but it does take a good deal of patience and a willingness to work on the project on your own.
I think this is a self-reinforcing loop. We are yet to reach a threshold of attention and fame. And after that, when we reach a critical mass of people knowing about us, the sponsorship and money question will come up, and there will be more opportunities. And we should work on that. I mean, I'm not trying to put that on anyone's shoulders, don't get me wrong, but I think it would be beneficial to try to get more exposure. And after a while, these things will inevitably come.
I also want to add that the community actually is very good, pretty good for sponsorship. I know in retrospect, we maybe not, but CIDA is clearly a sponsored project. The Cherry Pie is a sponsored project. And if we take a look at, imagine the Pro StarCraft scene, the number of sponsored players relative to the number of players is an extremely small percentage. And as a percentage of the field, I think we actually are pretty decent, especially if you consider academic projects and so on and so forth as sponsored, which to some extent I do. I consider the academic projects sponsored because they have a university name attached to it. So I think we're actually a pretty supported community, at least as a proportion. Now, getting that larger and getting the amount of, if there's funds or something that you're interested in getting dispersed, that's that number is always too low. But I think overall we're doing pretty good.
I suppose you get the point there.
And really, almost all of the bots have their long-term past history in some way comes from the academic world. And really, all of the AI development sort of starts as started in the academic world in the very beginning, and it has forked out from there.
Academic programmers, fa.
That's, you know, it's really formed the long term foundation, especially the Czech Technical University in Prague. and the Games and Simulations Research Group has really formed a backbone that has made a lot of this function over the long haul.
But I would argue that this is the function of academia, paving the road, and then when it's paved enough, businesses will come. Most industries work that way, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
It is interesting that on the competitive side in Brood War, that especially in the early years, the academic projects did extremely well competitively. But in recent years, that hasn't really been as much the case. It's mostly been individual or corporate projects that have done very well.
Well, corporate projects always bring a lot to the field in terms of, well, I mean, they're clearly experts in their field, as well as the fact that they have teams, organization, and the structure that they get to, the rigorous work structure they get to apply to it. They're results-oriented as opposed to process-oriented. Academic work is always process-oriented. I'm more interested, for example, my current build system is based off of running a lot of FAP sims. I'm not using COEP planning. I'm running thousands of FAP sims every round. I'm taking the moving average of those performance sims and determining what to build from there. Because no one else is doing it. Is it necessarily the best process? Not, who knows? But once you get all the bugs out of it, it works pretty good. My next push will fix a few of those bugs, and I think it's working better than what I was doing before, better than by hand, at least. So.
And it's interesting because, you know, a corporate project would look at a really experimental sort of algorithm or unique approach to the bot and go, I don't know if I really want to do that. I'll take the really known stuff and sort of iterate on that and come to a solution, which is a lot like what the SATA group has done, where they've taken a really well, probably the most studied backbone in StarCraft AI bot development, UAB, University of Alberta bot, and really tweaked and played with it and iterated on it until they have something really high performing. But maybe they would have an unwillingness to explore a really unique idea like what you're working on.
Yeah, I think that's a good descriptor of the corporate process. And I mean, they're at the top of the list. And part of that is also because if it wasn't at the top of the list, I doubt it would be released. They have a lot of PR associations. Any if there are, say, some tech company that has a internal contest or something like that for making a bot, that it may be on here. It's just named Tim's bot. It's not. They keep the label off it because that's part of presentation is only presenting things that win.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I've known of a couple projects that have not actually made it onto the ladder because they were, you know, started as sort of a small AI company wanting to show off what they could do, and then realizing it was a lot harder than they thought it was going to be. And at the same time, if you go look at the source through the source code of some of the bots, you will find very interesting and unusual things that wouldn't be there otherwise, if you know what you're reading. So it's really interesting.
All right. That's all I had for today. And this has been quite a long cast. So if you have nothing to add, I would like to wrap this cast.
Yeah, just good luck, everyone at CIG, and remember, or COG, and remember that beating a bad opponent is worth just as many points as beating a good one. So, good luck.
Yeah, good luck beating each other up. Thanks very much for being here. This has been an excellent cast, and I would like to have you back at some point in the future. So, goodbye.
Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.